Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is Wednesday, June 10th, 2020. I am Hank Jones, and you are on Hank Jones Poly Sports, part of Global Patriot Radio's network of shows here, part of the Blog Talk Radio Network, actually. And Global Patriot Radio is the group with which this show unites. Every Wednesday, 6 p.m. to either 7:30 p.m. or 8 p.m. tonight. We're going till 7:30. Talked about it last week. If and when I have guests, then I'll go to 8. Several different ways you can get in touch with the show. You can just listen on the internet, of course, at blogtalkradio.com/global-patriot-radio and choose the show, Hank Jones Poly Sports. You can also look on the live button, and then from there, down in the lower right, find the shows that are active. You can call 319-527-6706. You can listen that way. You can hit 1 if you want to talk, because then I'll get a little icon. You can, you know, get in the chat room. If you're online, you get in the chat room, you can make snide comments at me without, you know, having to actually talk to me and have me yell at you afterward. We've got a couple people in the chat right now. The Alaskan, of course, is here, and T. Bodie, who said he's going to be able to listen for the first 30 or 40 minutes. That's awesome. There's a lot to talk about today, of course. I don't even know where to start. I forgot to tell you, if you want to email me, hjpsports@gmail.com, or actually hjpsports1980@gmail.com, sorry. I'm on Facebook. I don't check it that much. After they started giving me violations for stuff, screw them. I'm on Twitter, @hpolysports, but the best way, look, call 319-527-6706, because that way, yeah, you can listen and or talk to me. A little late breaking news. Bonnie Pointer of the Pointer Sisters. She passed away at 69 from cardiac arrest. She was considered the Wild Sister. She's noted for having hung out with the hippies at Haight-Ashbury, for protesting at Berkeley, reading poetry with radical Angela Davis, and having dated Black Panther co-founder Huey Newton. She was part of the group. They scored their first hit in 1972 with Yes We Can Can. She won a Grammy along with her sister Anita in 1974 for a country crossover hit called Fairy Tale. Sorry, I don't know country music well enough to even have a clue what that song was. She left for a solo career in 1977, which wasn't the best timing, because after that, the group had its first hit, big hit, Fire. And by the mid-1980s, they had, I'm So Excited, Neutron Dance, Automatic, a couple of other ones I remember. Anyway, she would reunite with them on occasion. She did have one hit that went to number 11 called Heaven Must Have Sent You. Anyway, rest in peace, Bonnie Pointer. Part of a great musical family, for sure. Other news, a winning ticket in the $410 million Mega Millions lottery jackpot was sold in Arizona. What's breaking about that? No one seems to have noticed, and no one seems to have cared. Oh, politics news. Oh, God. Do I have to do this? Evidently, I do. Here's some non-controversial stuff. Bob Woodson, not Woodward, Bob Woodson. He was a civil rights veteran. Basically, he was on Tucker Carlson's show last week. His basic thrust was reject claims of systemic racism. And he says, instead, black struggles are issues of class and economics. Now, this is not a white guy saying this. This is a black gentleman. Bob Woodson was at the forefront of the civil rights movement back in the 50s and 60s. But, he's basically come to the idea that, look, you know, it's here's what he said. Some of what he said was that the Black Lives Matter movement is the cause more than the solution to a lot of the problems of the African American hardship. He says, I don't know what systemic racism is. Maybe someone can explain what that means. That's what he actually said. And Tucker Carlson said, it's a way to make people be quiet and stop asking questions about economics, as far as I can tell. And here's what Woodson's basic thrust is. He's, you know, look, he says, it means it's more about class than it is race. He says race is just being used to deflect attention away from the failures of people running the institutions that claim they are the salvation. As he says, why are black kids failing in school systems run by their own people and run by their own party? Now, he says, when Eric Holder was the U.S. attorney in Washington, D.C., and the attorney general, he says a lot of young black people were still shot by police. And he says, and not one cop was prosecuted. He says, there was no public outcry. He says, because when illegality or evil wears a black face, then it escapes detection. He said, look at the in terms of class. He says, look at the athletes, look at the entertainers. You know, they haven't stayed in their neighborhoods. They've left their neighborhoods. They've retreated to the comfy, gated communities that white entertainers and athletes and politicians relocated, if you want to call that, moved to whatever. And I totally get what he's saying. I mean, and he knows it better than I do, certainly. So, yeah, it's not just the quote-unquote high-profile black conservatives. It's former civil rights activists that are also saying it. Guess what? Murder charges have been filed. Yeah, finally. In the murder of David Dorn, he is the retired St. Louis Police Department captain. He was murdered while responding to an alarm at a friend's business at a pawn shop. And while the media, Black Lives Matter, et cetera, they all ignored it. But at least Stephen Cannon has been charged. By the way, the night Dorn was murdered, four other St. Louis officers were shot. Numerous others were pelted with rocks and fireworks. 555 businesses were burglarized or damaged, including a convenience store that actually burned. So yeah, I'm gonna touch on that briefly later after the break when I go into my rant. Oh, let's see what else. Oh, Chuck E. Schumer of New York, Senator Chuck Schumer and Senator Ron Wyden from Oregon. They want an investigation into the federal system. You ask? Of course not. No, they want to investigate the unemployment system problems in Florida. What the hell? Schumer has enough problems neglecting his own state of New York. Wyden's about as far removed from Florida as you can get, being in Oregon. So why are these two wanting this, and why Florida? How are they doing it, you ask? Yeah, I'll tell you. They're requesting a probe from U.S. Department of Labor Inspector General Scott Dahl. Why'd they ask Scott Dahl? I'll tell you why. Scott Dahl was appointed by President Barack Obama in 2013 when the Senate had a majority of 53 Democrats plus the two fake independents. Why do I say fake? I'll tell you why. Because look at their voting records. Angus King all along has said he caucuses with the Democrats. The other, Bernie Sanders, yeah, that's a joke. That's so basically 55 Democrats that confirmed him. The other problem, Scott Dahl announced his retirement June 2nd, effective June 21st. You think something shady might be going on here? Well, considering it's Chuck E. Schumer, possibly. Do you think? I'm going to read a bit from the article. This is from the Tampa Bay Times. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and Senator Ron Wyden, New York and Oregon respectively, the ranking Democrat on the Senate Finance Committee, wrote that Florida's failures stand out even among other states that have struggled to pay their out-of-work residents. Really? Okay. Says, this is such a joke. I mean, it says, while all states have had issues, Florida's are unique. Are they really unique? What's unique about Florida's? I'll tell you one. They gave. Yeah. Oh God. This is just it's a joke. Basically, it's political. They want to go after Ron DeSantis and they want to go after Senator Rick Scott, who was governor prior to DeSantis. You know, they're saying that Florida couldn't put together a website. You know what? Florida paid, I think, $8 million for their website. Meanwhile, they paid over $1 billion for the Obamacare website that never worked. Never has worked. Yeah, okay. Good job, Chucky. I got a word to the wise for those guys, though. I looked into all of them, Schumer, Wyden, DeSantis, Scott. It's pretty apparent to me that DeSantis and Scott are a lot smarter than Wyden and Schumer. And in terms of integrity, it's really not even close. Just saying. What else? What else politically? Okay, the fourth and presumably final funeral was held for George Floyd yesterday near Houston. Oh, yeah, that's where he's being laid to rest. His mother is there. He is there now. He is from there. Yeah, a lot of noted speakers and politicians took part. Joe Biden did a video message. Several different musicians sang, spoke, whatever. Al Sharpton spoke, which I'll talk about in my rant. George Floyd's brother mentioned that if his mother was still alive, she would have been right there on the casket mourning him and crying out about why did it happen? All in all, I think they all got the spotlight and the attention they were looking for anyway. I'm not quite sure how it honored George Floyd, since the main thrust appeared to be twofold. One, speakers getting attention, and two, producing an infomercial, if you will, for the Democrat Party. Well, anyway, it looks like these funerals and processionals are gone, so I guess it's back to looting and rioting and, you know. Oh, fear not, actually. It seems COVID-19 is once again showing up. So maybe the cities and states run by the left can reimpose their lockdowns and quarantines. Yeah, if you're going to get rid of President Trump, two things are going to have to happen for them. Or there are two things that must not happen, actually. Economic recovery, number one, and number two, a chance for Trump supporters to gather in public. Because basically, if those two things happen, any semblance of economic recovery and a chance for Trump supporters to gather, Joe Biden is not, he's going to crumble. You know, here's the other thing. The rioting, looting, they don't require social distancing, apparently. Commerce and economic activity, yes, that requires social distancing. Not looting and rioting. For whatever reason. Sports news. Let's get to sports news, since I'm tired of politics news today. Seems the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee... They're now, you know, like others, they're making public statements about equality and solidarity and change. A bit of a problem there, though. A year ago, the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee suspended a black female hammer thrower after the Pan Am Games. Why did they do it? She raised her fist on the medal stand to protest that very same thing. I'll read you a little bit about it. Because it's kind of interesting. Her name is Gwen Berry. Amid the unrest and anger across America, she pulled a black bandana up over her nose and an Emmett Till t-shirt over her chest and raised her fists on the streets of Houston. Now, here's the problem. As an Olympic hammer thrower, she did not kneel during the anthem on the medal stand. She did not hold up any protest signs. She did not do anything to embarrass her competitors. She raised her fist. Now, I know some people will say, well, remember those guys in 1968? Yeah, and I hope we learned from that. Look, I am as much as anyone not a big fan of kneeling during the anthem. But I think what John Carlos and Tommy Smith did in 1968 was pretty much okay. They stayed on the medal stand during the anthem. They lowered their heads and they raised their fists. We didn't have to like it, but it was certainly their right. But they got kicked out of the Olympic Village. Well, in this case, Gwen Berry was reprimanded, got a formal reprimand and a year of probation. Literally. Now, 10 months later, the person that suspended her and gave her put her on probation and gave her the reprimand is writing to their athletes. Her name is Sarah Hirschland. She's the CEO of U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee. She's writing to the athletes, quote, to condemn the inequality that disproportionately impacts black Americans. Now, this is the same systemic inequality, quote unquote, that she told Barry she couldn't protest on a medal stand. You know, like I said, I'm not a fan of kneeling during the anthem. I think by people getting into it, you call more attention to it, and that's what cheapens it. As I've said to other people before, and those of you who have been at Hawkeye games with me, I don't like the pregame shows. I don't like the halftime shows. I don't like all the anthem stuff. I don't care if people want to dance around during halftime. Screw it. That cuts into game time as far as I'm concerned. They don't need it. But, you know, so they have it, so respect it. But, you know, look, I get this anger some people. But you know what? We really didn't learn anything after 1968. If we're here 51 years later and it's still a problem. You know, I'm not asking people to agree or be in lockstep or even protest, but she wasn't doing any of that. Her call for an apology is going to fall on deaf ears, I'm sure. But she's not wrong, and the hypocrisy is obvious. And this is different from Kaepernick anyway. His protest, you know, I've said this before, but I'm going to reiterate it. His protest didn't start until he had lost his starting job. Yeah, he got a collusion settlement with the NFL. But the fact that he still doesn't have an NFL job, it's more about his skill level than it is about equality and justice. Is he talented? Sure. But you know what? You don't sacrifice team chemistry, team unity, or bring in someone who's always going to be a problem and have an issue and pay star money, or at least starter money. You're not going to do all that for someone who really isn't even starter material. He had his run. I grant that. In the end of 2014, when the starter, Alex Smith, got injured, he did help get the 49ers to the Super Bowl. But you know what? He was primarily effective using his legs, and teams figured him out. Unlike Lamar Jackson or Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, those guys can use their legs, but they also can use their arms. They can make all the throws. Lamar Jackson especially can make all the throws. Patrick Mahomes can make all the throws. Kaepernick, in his little manufactured workout last year, threw three different types of passes. He threw nothing in an out pattern type stuff, nothing sideline, nothing over, you know, none of the back shoulder passes. He didn't do any of that. So, no, he's not any of those guys. In short, you don't bring in a backup quarterback to tell everybody how things should be run on or off the field. If the 49ers brought him back, you know what? He'd probably be fourth string. Yes, all three of the active quarterbacks for last year's 49ers teams are better than Colin Kaepernick. You may not like that, but it's fact. The third string quarterback was C.J. Beathard. Now, granted, these are my Hawkeyes, you know, glasses talking. But Google this. Google 2015 Beathard to Tavon Smith TD Big Ten Championship game. Kaepernick can't make that throw. I'm telling you, he can't. I've watched it. He can't make that throw. And Beathard is at best the second best option for the 49ers. He's listed as third team, but it's, you know, he's probably as good as a second teamer. That's what keeps him from getting major interest, folks. He simply isn't first-level talent. He might be a hard worker, maybe. Does he got enough talent to stick with the team and hold a clipboard and all that? Absolutely. Is he good enough that you'd have with, like, a Brett Favre, a Ben Roethlisberger, or going way back, a Kenny Stabler or Joe Namath? Not even. He's nowhere in that league. You put up with stuff from those guys because you know why? They're stars. They're star, first-level, top-notch talent. Colin Kaepernick is not. He's simply not. Is he a good guy? I don't know. I don't care. I tend to think someone who wears socks depicting cops as pigs is kind of a pig himself. But you know what? Maybe he's, you know, people have worn joke T-shirts before that it's funny to them. They don't realize that it offends other people. But no, he's not first-level talent. And so that's why he doesn't have a job in the NFL. I'm not sure why we're still debating that, but he's just not. Okay, moving on. DeAndre Hopkins and Deshaun Watson. Anybody know those guys? They're former Clemson Tiger players. They now are in the league, as they say, the NFL. They will not use Clemson as their alma mater during TV introductions. The reason is that Clemson continues to recognize and honor former U.S. Vice President and slavery advocate John C. Calhoun on its buildings and in its honor college. You know, I know I'm making a big deal out of it, but I'm just reading the story, guys. and gals. That's all I'm doing. Okay, I'm just going to read it briefly. As nationwide protests demand a shift in American race relations, DeAndre Hopkins and Deshaun Watson are using the moment to call for change at their former college. They used their platforms to advocate for the removal of a slave supporter's name at an honors building at Clemson on Monday. They tweeted a petition started by Clemson student, I'm going to leave that out, demanding the removal of former U.S. Vice President John C. Calhoun's name from the school's Calhoun Honors College. Hopkins' tweet says, Clemson University still honors the name of slave owner John C. Calhoun on its buildings, signs, and in the name of its honors program. I am joining the voices of the students and faculty to restart this petition to rename the Calhoun Honors College. I don't know that either of those guys were in the Calhoun Honors College. If they were, then I can, you know, they certainly have a point. Clemson, Deshaun Watson says, Clemson University should not honor slave owner John C. Calhoun in any way. His name should be removed from all university property and programming. I am joining the students, faculty, and DeAndre to restart this petition to rename the Calhoun Honors College. Calhoun served as the seventh vice president of the U.S., 1825 to 1832. He represented South Carolina in the U.S. House and Senate. He was a slave owner and a staunch advocate of slavery. Quoted as saying, slavery is indispensable to a Republican government. Now, remember, this is the 1800s when he says it. So the petition points to Calhoun's stance on slavery in contrast to Clemson President James P. Clements' vow to not tolerate racism in any form. Yeah, so, look, Hopkins won't acknowledge Clemson. That's fine. But you know what? He should repay the scholarship money then, maybe. I don't know. It's this kind of stuff that fans the flames, though. You know, I mean, you know what you did? You now let everybody know about the name of the Honors College at Clemson. Do you think anybody cared before this? No. You think anybody really cares now? No. Whatever. Don't acknowledge Clemson. I don't care. Okay. This one's going to hit a little closer to home. In light of the Floyd protests and head coach Kirk Ferentz addressing the Iowa football team, that apparently wasn't good enough for some. Several former Iowa players tweeted and posted on social media that there are racial disparities in the Iowa football program. Some went on to defend Kirk Ferentz, but called out strength and conditioning coach Chris Doyle, offensive coordinator Brian Ferentz, the son of Kirk Ferentz. Another player made a lengthy post, non-racial, calling out Doyle and another assistant for being insensitive to his ADHD and other learning issues. Another former player named the other assistant as linebackers coach Seth Wallace. After reaching out to the former players, Coach Ferentz made several statements and apologies. In addition, it was later announced that strength and conditioning coach Chris Doyle was put on administrative leave and that an external investigation will take place. Coach Ferentz also appointed a committee of current and former black players to try and bring forth issues that come up and work to resolve them. More on this later, folks. Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban is calling out white people. He wants them to talk about about race and privilege in a way that moves the conversation forward. Cuban says white people are too quick to get defensive when white privilege comes up. I got to read this to you. I don't want to say it's a joke. Like I've said before, I respect Cuban enough. I mean, he's probably a decent enough guy. It says, it might be difficult, but Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban wants white people to talk more about race and privilege in a way that moves the conversation forward. Cuban, who has been outspoken since the killing of George Floyd in police custody, spoke about the topic at an invitation-only event called Courageous Conversation, organized by the Mavericks outside their stadium, according to ESPN's Tim McMahon. Here's what Cuban said. I need all of us to really open up and talk to each other, even when it's difficult. Cuban said during his brief speech at the beginning of the event. Even when it's not something we're comfortable with, particularly those of you who look like me, the white people. Because it's hard to discuss race when you're white. The reality is, to be brutally honest, when people talk about white privilege, we get defensive. We all have this mechanism that I call manufactured equivalency to try to protect ourselves. We'll say, I have a lot of black friends. We'll say, I grew up in a mixed community, so I'm not like that. I can't possibly be someone who takes advantage of white privilege. And we manufacture this equivalency. It's incumbent on us to stop doing that, because that doesn't move us forward when we do that. That's part of having a courageous conversation. The topic of privilege and the unequal treatment of black Americans by police has become a major political discussion as calls for police reform are heard across the country. Also reportedly appearing at the event were Mavericks forward Maxie Kleber, Mavericks CEO Sint Marshall, Dallas County Judge Clay Jenkins, and Dallas Police Chief Renee Hall. The latter two both called for police reform. We need to radically transform the way we do policing in this country and this community, Jenkins said, adding that he'd recently met virtually with activists who had a list of 10 suggested steps. Alongside some of his team's players, Cuban previously made an appearance at a vigil outside Dallas Police Headquarters. Billionaire has also toyed with an independent run for president against Donald Trump, who he has frequently criticized, person in the sports world who has discussed white privilege in the wake of Floyd's death. As Cincinnati Reds first baseman Joey Votto published an op-ed saying, white privilege made him complicit in the death of Floyd. One word. Hogwash. Absolute hogwash. You talk about white privilege, you do it at an invitation-only event called Courageous Conversation. There is nothing courageous about holding an invitation-only event. You want to talk, you know what, speak for yourself, Mark Cuban. I don't get defensive about race. You know why? Because I don't think about race. I don't have to count black friends. You know why? Because I don't count any friends. I just have friends. I don't need to count them. Did I grow up in a mixed community? No. To say I'm not like that? I don't know. Maybe sometimes I am. I don't know. I can't possibly be someone who takes advantage of white privilege. What white privilege are you talking about? As an example, what white privilege would I take advantage of? I mean, it's mind-boggling that some of these guys will look, do we have some race issues in this country? Of course we do. Is it much better than it was 20 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago? Absolutely. You know when it started getting worse again? When we had a black president who made things divisive. It's like I talked about that ABC News thing last week where their bullet on their graphic was a nation divided. We weren't divided on the George Floyd issue, folks. I've yet to talk to anyone who looks at that and sees anything but murder and who is anything but disgusted by that. Horrified. America wasn't divided on it. Divided. The left made us divided. You may not like it if you're a lefty listening to my show, if you consider yourself a moderate or you say you're anti-Republican. It wasn't Republicans that made us divided on this issue. It was the left. It was the elites like Mark Cuban holding invitation-only events. Says he isn't the only white person. Well, let's count the white people. And we want to do that since people count their black friends. Believable that some of these people call out and say, we white people, speak for yourself. I don't defend anything. You know why? Because it's not something you defend. You try to be the best person you can be. You don't defend your race any more than you defend who your parents are or defend where you were born. Unbelievable, though. Cuban is holding an invitation-only event to discuss this. Unbelievable. Like I said, hogwash. Here's more on Kaepernick, by the way. ESPN article. Chargers running back Justin Jackson says Colin Kaepernick should feel vindicated. That's what he said, vindicated. Okay. Los Angeles Chargers running back Justin Jackson, a Northwestern alum, by the way, said Wednesday he thinks that Colin Kaepernick should feel, quote, very vindicated about kneeling during the national anthem in 2016, and that whether players kneel or don't kneel before games in the 2020 season and beyond will be the context of a bigger national discussion. That is, Jackson said, players might not kneel if they believe they are listened to when they speak about use of force and a variety of other social issues, quote, in our communities. So in other words, I don't know, I thought we did it to present the flag and do it before a football game. When did football then become about political statements? But anyway, he says, but I think what Colin did as far as kneeling and everything, the point of the protest was to bring attention to the issue. No, it was not. Kaepernick's girlfriend said that's what he should say the issue was. Folks, please listen. Kaepernick did not start doing this until he lost his starting job. Anyway, Jackson continues. Even though that obviously got skewed because of a multitude of factors, that was the reason. That was the motivation behind the protest. Now that the light has shined and that's kind of really exposed, the way I'm thinking of it, the best methodology moving forward is to do everything we can with our platform to affect that positive change. Okay, this is what Bob Woodson was talking about. Class. Bob Woodson. It's a matter of economic and socioeconomic status. I don't know if kneeling will have the most positive net outcome because of the way it gets such a hyper-partisan issue, really because they don't want to talk about the real issue. Nevertheless, I think if we just use our platforms like we are now to continue to expose and advocate for the change we want to see in society, that might be the best method going forward. But we'll see. So in other words, these guys are paid to play football. I'm not saying they shouldn't speak out. That's not what I'm saying. But these guys are paid to play football. If I'm a coach, care who it is, if these guys are running around during the week doing these interviews, you're damn right I'm not going to play some of them. White, black, whatever. If I don't think your mind is in the game, I don't want you calling plays or calling audibles or running routes. If all you're worried about is whether you get to use a Sharpie to sign a football after you make a touchdown or whether these people, 99.9% of these people don't live in these quote-unquote our communities. Antonio Brown, remember his issues last year screaming at the police in Hollywood, Florida, in a gated community? He wasn't in any hood or in any ghetto. He was in a gated community. In a house that, if I remember correctly, was valued at $1.2 million, or maybe it was $600,000. But I'm pretty sure it was $1.2 million. So, yeah. There was a movie called The Bishop's Wife in 1947, and it was remade in 1996 as The Preacher's Wife, featuring Denzel Washington, Whitney Houston, Courtney B. Vance. And Courtney B. Vance's character made a great point. There was a rich Gregory Hines plays a rich former community resident, but he makes the big time, so he moves uptown. And he's trying to get the people in the black community to sell out their church downtown so he can redevelop, and then they can move uptown. And he shows them, like, they'll have retirement communities, and they'll have, and he shows them tennis courts. And Courtney B. Vance's character says, I'm not sure what to, he says, you need to be forward thinking. He goes, I'm just thinking about the people in my church. They don't play much tennis, Joe. That's exactly right. I mean, this is about class struggle and class envy. And it's about, for a lot of them, it's about guilt. Now, Jackson says it's their First Amendment right to kneel. I don't argue that. I really don't. It's not always about your First Amendment right, though. As an example, it's your Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. But it's probably not a good idea to walk into your kid's school carnival with your 12-gauge Remington, you know, on your shoulder. Probably not a good idea. You know, I mean, it's all great to that we have Fifth Amendment rights, but when you're a kid in class and you and a couple kids make a major foul-up and you get caught, it's probably not a good idea to exercise your Fifth Amendment right, especially if it's endangered another kid or something like that. You know, I mean, let's not confuse rights on every issue. Let's not confuse rights with doing the right thing sometimes. Now, he said, Jackson says Cap's message, quote unquote, 100% got clouded. And it really got clouded for insidious reasons, right? He says the reason it got clouded is they wanted to make it about something that it wasn't. They didn't want to talk about the real issue he was bringing up. No, what he didn't want to talk about was the fact that he was no longer the starting quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers. I'll say this again. If it was all about being a troublemaker, then yeah, then he should be out of the league. If it was about the fact that he was totally blackballed, no. You think a Jerry Jones would? I mean, Jerry Jones over the years has taken on problem. Every team has taken on problem players. It's simply this: he's a loudmouth. He's trying to make himself a social justice warrior, but he doesn't have the talent to be a starter. It's not that hard. You know, and they talk about protest. He says that Jackson says his coach and the general manager have been supportive of players participating in protests. Guess what? That's different than rioting, looting, or quote unquote clouding the issue. You know, these folks are clouding the issue themselves a little bit. It's exactly what they're doing. You know why? You know why? I'll tell you why. Because sometimes it's about their own guilt. Sometimes it's about their own shortcomings. Hiding them or calling attention to the shortcomings of others. Oh, God, this next item. It's from my ESPN. The title of this article pretty much says it all. It says, "Welcome back, Reggie Bush. You never should have left." Yes, folks, Reggie Bush is back in the good graces of the USC football program and university. I'm going to read part of this. I'm going to promise you, I will try not to puke while I'm reading this, but I'm going to read it anyway because okay. The title, as I said, "Welcome back, Reggie Bush. You should never have left, or you never should have left." In a world where you can get pretty much anything delivered to your front porch, here's hoping that Reggie Bush answers the door one day soon to find the postal truck has shown up with a Heisman Trophy. His Heisman Trophy. Bush sent it back to the Heisman Trophy Trust 10 years ago, forfeited it, in the curious term used at the time, after the NCAA put USC on probation for 4 years, largely because Bush and his family took lavish gifts from two sports marketers. It has been 10 years since USC declared Bush untouchable, something the rest of college football learned when he played. The university disassociated, another curious word, itself from one of its greatest players ever and removed its copy of Bush's Heisman from the lobby of Heritage Hall and sent it back to the trust. This from a school that still displays the Heisman won by O.J. Simpson. Wednesday, 10 years to the day since the announcement, USC disassociated itself from its disassociation of Bush. Heisman Trophy Trust Executive Director Rob Whalen asked for a reaction to the end of Bush's disassociation and about the possibility of rescinding his forfeiture of the Heisman, said Wednesday morning that the trust, quote, has no comment at this time. Much of the NCAA punishment exacted a toll on USC. The reduction of 30 scholarships over 3 years reduced the Trojans' depth chart pretty much to whomever walked past Howard Jones Field on a weekday afternoon. The two-year bowl ban withheld 2 months of practices and two games from a program of young players who needed the work. We remember Pete Carroll's successor, a young coach named Lane Kiffin, flamed out at USC. We don't remember he coached under conditions that set up the Trojans to struggle. When USC won the Pac-12 in 2017, it ended a 9-year conference championship drought, the program's longest since the 1920s. And you want to know something, folks? You know why they won a lot? Because they cheated a lot. Seriously, what is next? I mean, are they going to have an O.J. Simpson day at USC or at the Coliseum? I too kind of wonder why they keep his Heisman Trophy. But you know what? That doesn't excuse the fact that Bush cheated. People say, well, his parents got free, poor, you know, living and all that. Yeah, you know what? When you know that your parents have that kind of stuff, you don't have certain worries. You know, other players that have to deal with all that stuff, some guys don't have to because it's taken care of for them. That's an advantage. That's what's called an advantage. That's what's not right about it. That's why USC was on probation. That's why he was suspended and they disassociated. I'm going to read some of the stuff from the chat room here. T. Bodie was able to actually listen in for 30 or 40. He did have a nice grimace about one of my comments. Alaskan had a fact. I love the fact that one of the receivers from his self-tryout was taken and he was left standing alone on the field. Exactly. He's referring to Kaepernick's tryout. Kaepernick had like four receivers at his tryout, four stooges, basically, told what pattern to run, et cetera, no defenders in the way or whatever. One of those guys got picked up. I don't know if it was by an NFL team or maybe Canadian League team or XFL. Kaepernick was not. It's funny that happened. It really is. I mean, and it tells you something. It tells you two things. One, here's the other side that I don't like to harp on this, but I will for this one time. Well, okay, it won't be this one time. I'll probably do it every other week. Kaepernick's arrogance may be as much a factor as anything. If he's too proud to take a job as a backup, if he's too proud to take a job where he's not guaranteed to be the starter, and this is the NFL, folks, that's ignorance, it's arrogance, and it's pride. It's overblown pride and egomania. Now, Eric, welcome, Eric. Eric's in the house. Eric says, John Calhoun was one of the greatest politicians in our country's history. He was removed from the ticket by Jackson in the 1832 election because he went against Jackson on the tariff of abomination on cotton. But we must erase our history so the libs can rewrite it. And as Eric says, not in my classroom. That's exactly right. You know, I was born in the North, folks. I'm a born bred Yankee, if you want to put it that way. Born raised a Yankee. I wouldn't have supported the South in the Civil War. But you know what? Those were Americans. They were quote unquote airing their grievances, as was their right. Some of those men died, Americans fighting for their cause. You don't have to like it. I mean, okay, we don't want to glorify an Adolf Hitler, but we don't go over to Germany if they have veteran cemeteries and destroy them and vandalize them. We don't take down German flags because they might remind us. You know, we've kept concentration camps alive, you know, intact, so that people can be reminded of what happened in Nazi Germany. We don't rewrite it. We don't erase history, because when you erase history, guess what happens? People forget it. And then what happens? It gets repeated. Why? Because there's nobody there to say, hey, folks, let's look right over there and remember what happened. Do I care about the Confederate flag? Not really. Bubba Wallace, he's a black NASCAR driver. He's saying they need to remove all Confederate flags. I don't know. I don't care. I mean, but you know what? If fans go into a stadium or whatever that's called, a track with their flags, you're really going to start legislating what the fans do? Let's give you a case in point. Oh, no, I'll save it for later. I'll save it for later. back in my into my rant. Alaskan points out about Eric, you are the exception. That's correct. Ooh, good point. Eric says, in order to graduate from a German high school today, you have to have in your transcripts that you have visited at least one concentration camp. Think about that. It has to be an official function that you attend. Think about that. Think about if we still have the Citadel as a college. We still have places like Virginia Military Institute. You know, people are talking about, people, and I don't want to bring up President Trump right now because he hasn't done anything in the news this week aside from people that have slammed him, he hasn't, he hasn't done anything wrong, so to speak. But, people get on, he's a racist, he's not, but they get on it. The governor of Virginia went to a party. He went to parties in blackface, but not just in blackface, folks. He had his arms painted. Justin Trudeau did the same thing. Not just blackface, but they're painting their arms and stuff. They went as, quote, Negroes to costume parties. You know what? In the case of Ralph Northam, he has a D next to his name. That's why nobody's called him out. But he did that. Now, he passes it off, if I learned my lesson, blah, blah, blah. I'm sorry, if you were doing that in college, you haven't learned crap. If you're so arrogant to do that in college, you know what? You can paint the pig, but you know what? You're still a pig. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So anyway, yeah, Reggie Bush cheated. They cheated. And people are saying, sad, we have to bring him back. Okay, I'm going to go back. Another bit of the fallout from the Iowa Hawkeye issue that I didn't talk about before. Redshirt sophomore linebacker Dylan Doyle, he has entered his name in the NCAA transfer portal. Now, if that name sounds familiar, he is the son of Coach Chris Doyle, the strength and conditioning coach who has been put on leave. Basically, he made an announcement. He said, now Coach Doyle defended himself against the claims. Now, when you read the quotes, there's a couple of lines they leave out Coach Doyle's statement. If you read his complete statement and then you read what other people quoted, they did not. He says that Coach Doyle, here's how ESPN puts it. At no time have I ever crossed the line of unethical behavior or bias based upon race. I do not make racist comments, and I don't tolerate people who do. In between those, he said, I applaud the players for being comfortable enough. I applaud the players for bringing this up and their right to do so. Then it goes on to say, I do not make racist comments, and I don't tolerate people who do. I am confident that a complete review of the body of work over 21 years will speak for itself. And I am trusting the process to respect the rights and experiences of parties involved. Sorry, folks, your rights were... Dylan Doyle says he didn't directly reference his father's situation, but here's what he said. Growing up in Iowa City, it has always been my dream to wear the Tiger Hawk, and I have taken great pride representing the state of Iowa for the last two seasons. He wrote on Twitter, the relationships I've formed through this program will last forever, and I'm so incredibly grateful for each of the people I've met during my time here. I'd like to thank my teammates and others in the community for the overwhelming amount of support I've received the last few years. Now, he played four games as a freshman and redshirted. That was allowable. And then he played all 13 games last year. So, yeah, there's a little bit of more fallout from that. I'm going to take a quick break. I'm going to come back. I am going to rant. I'm definitely going to rant, as I always do. T. Bodie pointed out, Trump did say that no way is he renaming the military bases. Absolutely correct. It's not, in fact, it's not his within his purview to do it anyway. So anyway, folks, I'm going to take a quick break, about two minutes and 10 seconds. Going to load up on some coffee, some stuff to wet my throat, as they say. A little bit of water, a little bit of iced coffee. So enjoy the next two minutes and 10 seconds with a little music. are back. This is Hank Jones with Hank Jones Poly Sports, part of Blog Talk Radio's Global Patriot Radio Network. Hey, guess what? I'm not the only part of Global Patriot Radio Network. There are other shows. 7 days in a week, seven shows. Each day, a different show. Six different hosts, actually. But seven different shows. All starts Mondays. Mondays, Vito and Big Al. The Vito Esposito Show with Big Al. Their theme being Mamma Mia, No Sharia. Now, they go at 6 o'clock every Monday. Good stuff. Predominantly concerned with the continual push for Sharia law in communities around the U.S. and in truth in the U.S. itself. Tuesday nights, Eric from Kafiristan brings you Radio Free Kafiristan. Eric's in the chat room right now, so if you want to jump into the chat area and talk with him, he's accessible in this way, and you're not interrupting his show. Eric goes at 6 o'clock, and pointed out not in my classroom. Eric knows the Bible very well, and he knows the contrasts with the Quran. And he is able to separate for you the, I'm going to do it nicely. He's able to separate the myth that is pushed on us from aggressive and, from Muslim leaders around the world. The ideas of it being strictly a religion of peace and living in harmony, he cuts through all that. He cuts through the myth, and he brings it straight to you. Basically tells the truth versus the sanitized versions that our media will push on behalf of the folks in care. By the way, folks, you always hear about lobby groups. Think, well, they must have a big lobby. You know, the Muslims have a big lobby in Washington. Well, yes, they do. But you know what? They have almost as big a lobby in Hollywood. If you watch a lot of your television shows today, and your movies as well, but the show Homeland that just concluded its run on Showtime, oh, I enjoyed the show. I mean, you have to suspend your disbelief, because if you can believe a CIA agent that is, goes on and off her meds and is able to keep her job for, 10 seasons, then, you got to be willing to believe anything. But in that, they pretty much put forth the idea that at worst, a few Muslims were bad and perpetrated 9/11, but America was more, pretty much the one at fault. So anyway, I'm digressing. That's Tuesdays, Mondays and Tuesdays with Vito and Al and Eric. Thursdays, the Sutliffian Report with Paul Sutliff. I think Paul goes at 7, but it might be 6 like all the rest of us. Fridays, Andrew Herod with Islam in Focus. That's at 1 Eastern. Saturdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 10 to midnight, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie reveal the truth about Islam. And then Eric's back on Sundays with the Real Interfaith Dialogue. That's at 3 p.m. Eastern, I think. Vito Esposito in the house. Speaking of Vito and Big Al, we have Monday and Tuesday hosts in the chat. This would be a beautiful time for you to log in and talk with these guys, because they're not worried about their show right now. They're just here to blow crap on the host of this show. And I gladly take it, frankly. Anyway, so those are our other shows on Blog Talk Radio's Global Patriot Radio Network. And just so you know, those other shows are probably better than mine. So, hey, real quick, my friend Jeff, who talked about my awesome music choice last week of You Got Me Floating by Jimi Hendrix, said about my recent break song, wow, an obscure one. Jeff probably gets it. That's a kind of an amalgamation of some different Hendrix riffs. It was repackaged in the old WCW wrestling as the NWO theme, which stood for the wrestling version of New World Order. I play that because I think there's a too sizable a proportion of or a proportion of people that are calling for a quote new world order type of existence in our country and in our planet, and it kind of sucks. And while you're here, you're going to hear facts, and you're going to hear about politics and sports and when they meet and when it's not pretty. Okay, it's time for my rant portion of the program. Ostensibly, the only reason I'm really around probably because it's ranting is something I do best. Okay, I'm going to talk about this Al Sharpton at the George Floyd funeral. I'll mention a little bit of quid pro Joe, but okay, Al Sharpton said the outcome for the officers would have been totally different if it were flipped. In other words, if it had been four black officers and a white man, the outcome would have been different. Now, I'm not sure what he's saying, because he didn't say that the black police officers would never have killed the white man. But he's almost implying that it's about race, but forgetting that it's not about race, it's about police misconduct. I'm not sure what else the officers could have been charged with. We now know that George Floyd and Derek Chauvin probably more than just coincidentally bumped into each other. Derek Chauvin is charged with second-degree murder. Now, there's a reason he wasn't charged with first-degree one, because it requires being able to prove premeditation. And in the state of Minnesota, I've been told many times that for a charge of first-degree murder, a grand jury has to be convened. So either Sharpton won't admit it, or he just won't own it, that it's an issue of police conduct or misconduct in this case, and not race. He implied that some people are acting like this was not a crime. He said that. He says, I've heard it discussed that this was just a tragedy, not a crime. Is he that much of a moron deliberately trying to inflame the situation? Seriously, is he that much of a moron? He's wearing a pastor's robe with the stripes on. I think it's two stripes. And in the Baptist church, that means reverend. He's not a doctor. I don't believe he has a doctorate. If he does, wow, doctorates come pretty cheap then. He's wearing a pastor's robe. He's wearing a pastor's robe and he's saying this. Did he not get it? I mean, nobody, literally nobody, expressed anything but outraged over what took place that resulted in the murder of George Floyd. Good God, Sean Hannity is literally calling for full-on police reform. He's saying that no officer should ever grab, punch, choke, or anything else to the neck area. He is literally saying that. Sean Hannity, who never agrees with Sharpton on anything, but he's saying, look, this is police reform is absolutely needed. What doesn't Sharpton get? Nobody. Nobody is playing this off as just a mere tragedy or an accident. It was murder. We get that, Al. The good Reverend Al didn't even pretend to make it about social justice or racism in the end. It was an overt grab at remunerations. He didn't say for George Floyd, though. He said lives like George Floyd will not matter until somebody pays the cost of taking our lives. So, yeah, you can count on Al to try and milk this for every single penny he can get. Not for the Floyd family. He claimed that they are going to do everything possible to delay prosecution and accountability. I sincerely hope to Minnesota AG Keith Ellison. Look, for all his faults, Keith Ellison so far has done this pretty much by the book. But for a change, it would be nice to see someone, anyone, in the NAACP, the liberal left black community, slap Sharpton, at least figuratively anyway, flat across the chops. Are you kidding me? They're doing everything possible to delay prosecution and accountability. Charges have been filed. There's a process to be followed. Keith Ellison said that. It's being followed. We now know that Derek Chauvin and his lawyers have tried to negotiate plea deals. So no, this isn't going away. This isn't going to be delayed. They're not trying to absolve accountability. Where the hell is he coming to say that on national television? Because, yes, this was a nationally televised funeral. This was not about George Floyd. This was about everyone else but George Floyd. He all but used this as a public forum to go after President Trump. While this is in his DNA, at some point, You know what? Have some dignity and bring some dignity to the proceedings. You know, this is supposed to be a memorial service, not a DNC infomercial. This is worse. If people remember back in 2002 or 2004, I think it was 2002, but it might have been 2004. Paul Wellstone was a senator from Minnesota. He was up for re-election, and not too long before the election, he was killed in a tragic plane crash. The Paul Wellstone Memorial literally became an infomercial event. Jesse Ventura was the governor of Minnesota at that time, and he was sickened by it. He originally had said he would appoint a Democrat senator to finish Paul Wellstone's term. He rescinded that. He said, you know what? Because he said a Democrat was who was voted for. He rescinded that. He said, after that disgusting display at Paul Wellstone's memorial, I am going to appoint someone of my choosing. He appointed an independent because Ventura pretended to be independent. But that's what this was worse than that. This was sheer exploitation. You know, would he have shown up for George Floyd's funeral if it was, quote, as he the reverse? And well, by that, I mean, if George Floyd had pulled a gun, been a PCP maniacal psycho, would Sharpton still lament the loss of black life? Would Sharpton care if it had been white on white? No. If it had been black on black, would he have cared? No. He would not have. Unless he could milk it somehow. Unless he could exploit it. I'll tell you what. Here's another question I have. What connection did Sharpton even have? He has no connection to Minnesota. He has no connection to Houston. Yet he seems to show up everywhere. You know what his connection is? The very thing he claims that it should never be about. It's about two things. It's about race. He's making it about race, which he claims shouldn't be happening. And he's making it about money. If money's going to show up, Al Sharpton's going to show up. And I'll tell you what, in the perhaps the most disgusting display of off-topic, this guy uses a funeral to call out the NFL, saying the NFL shouldn't waste their breath on an apology, but should give Colin Kaepernick a job. Seriously? This is ostensibly a funeral in Houston for a totally unrelated murder by police in Minneapolis. While you, Reverend Al, have no connection with either place, guess what? Neither does Colin Kaepernick. He has no connection to Houston or Minneapolis. Your lack of understanding about Kaepernick's abilities aside, just how low and then how poor of taste can you, George Floyd's six-year-old daughter, is really going to remember your stirring speech as it relates to Cap's NFL issues? What a disgusting human being. In short, this might be the most indirectly disrespectful eulogy that's ever been or will ever be delivered at a funeral, a memorial service, or whatever, whether it be the first funeral, the fourth funeral, or any of them in between. As for QPJ, really one comment. He left a video message. He didn't even show up for the funeral. He sure as hell didn't mind getting the free advertisement and doing an infomercial, but he didn't show up. But he sends a video message. Man, that's disgusting to me. If any of you are at my funeral, by the way, and a video pops up, please, I'm gonna put it in my will. I'm gonna somehow get like 8 guns to be left at my funeral service around, and I'm gonna leave instructions for each of you. Get up there and start firing away at the video screen if that happens at my funeral. I don't care who it is. If a video pops up, oh, how sick, how sick. Okay, I'm going to get to it. I had to, and I didn't want to. It's sad that I'm here doing this, but well, you know what? I got a call to take, so I'm gonna take this call. Good afternoon.
Hello.
You're on Hank Jones. Good afternoon. You're on Hank Jones Polysports. What's your name?
Hey, Hank. This is Brother Warren from New Orleans. Wake up.
Hey, Brother Warren. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine. I had picked up about 4 or 5 minutes ago in your show, and I meant to tune in earlier, but I just got back to it, though. But I thought Reverend L. Sharpton did a fine job of the eulogy of George Floyd yesterday and on the one in Minneapolis.
Did you really? So you didn't find it problematic that he talked more about other stuff?
Well, I think what he was trying to do was to bring everything together in the context of what the response is, and that's racism.
That's fair enough, but I don't think. Well, no, go ahead. I understand what you're saying, Brother Warren, but you know this was really supposed to be about memorializing the life of George Floyd. I don't think anybody disputes what happened was terrible. I mean, as people have said to me, have you gone back and looked at it? Look, I saw it once. I can't watch it anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm not about to do that. But
I think, though,
we're not memorializing George Floyd if we just continue to pound on this and pound. And like I said, he brought up other stuff. He brought up Colin Kaepernick.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. That's just Brother Warren. To me, as I come from more of the sports background, you know, I know this is poly sports. I care less about politics than I do about sports. And in this case, I think bringing sports into it in this regard was a terrible disservice to George Floyd's family, to George Floyd's memory. And frankly, I don't think it does any favors for Colin Kaepernick. So,
well,
I think
the twisted irony is that Colin Kaepernick took a knee when the initial uproar about him started, and this man, George Floyd, was killed by an officer kneeling on his neck. And so I think that's the irony of the whole thing. In some kind of way, they do tie in, because Colin Kaepernick was protesting the killing of black people by police, and here this man who was killed by police was killed by way of a police officer kneeling on his neck.
Okay, George, Brother Warren, can I ask you a quick question? Because I don't know how – it says New Orleans, and I'm a big fan of visiting New Orleans, by the way. I mentioned to you on Vito's show the other night about a guy named Gary Brown, who I used to love hear play there. But
I haven't heard from him lately.
Okay. Do you follow football?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Do you know why Colin Kaepernick took a knee? Do you know when he started taking a knee?
Because someone recommended that he takes a knee as opposed to just sitting down during the Pledge of Allegiance.
No. What Colin Kaepernick started taking a knee when he lost his starting job with the San Francisco 49ers. That's when it happened. It's exactly when it happened. Now, do I think that he didn't care one lick about? No, I don't. I wouldn't say that. He probably cares, but he made it an issue at the same time that he lost his starting job. I'm not saying that Kaepernick doesn't have complaints. I'm not even saying he has the absolute right to do that stuff. But if you look at what's happened with Kaepernick still doesn't have a job in the NFL. And Al Sharpton, again, tried to equate that with racism. Colin Kaepernick doesn't have a job in the NFL because he won't take a backup job. He won't take a backup job, and he's not good enough to win a starting job. He's just not. Right
okay.
Now.
Okay.
Now, could he get there? I'm not saying he couldn't, because I'm not saying he doesn't have the talent. But he's
right. I didn't want to talk about. We're calling Kaepernick. It's just a twisted irony how this come together. Now, as far as Al Sharpton, some of us call him Shaky L. But you know what? When you have people who are poor, they get killed at the hands of an entity like the police department, and nobody's around to speak for them. You know, Al Sharpton does a favor for these families to take their injustice and let the whole world hear it. So I don't have a problem with that. You know, we all criticize Al as being an ambulance chaser. That is, whenever something happens, he goes there. But when I look in hindsight at families who are affected by these type of things, they need people with the biggest megaphone to be by their side to help them and let the world know the injustice they suffered.
And that's a fair assessment. That is a fair assessment. I don't dispute that at all. I question Al Sharpton's motive a little bit, and I question his sincerity. But I don't question say that you know George Floyd's family in this case, his kids, he's got a 6-year-old daughter. Yeah, that's you know what happened was bad. Now there, look, some people are making a deal of the fact that George Floyd had a shaky past or whatever. That may be. I don't know. I don't care, frankly, because what happened what we saw in that video with those police officers was wrong, and it can't that kind of stuff can't keep happening again. It just can't.
You know, so, George Floyd, from my reading, did have a checkered past. And, you know, Al Sharpton even talked about that in his eulogy, which I thought was so beautiful, that even somebody that's considered a throwaway has gotten the world talking about these issues. Now, when the young man went into that church in Charleston and shot those nine people who invited him in there, the police handcuffed him with some kind of dignity, and when he was hungry, they took him to Burger King to get something to eat. The man that shot Ronald Reagan is out free, walking around. Police didn't kill him. And we can go on and on and on how people who have killed people, white people who have killed people, easily go in the police car and go to jail, but black people with no weapons at all get killed by the police.
Yeah, and then we write it off by saying they're thugs. But no, there's been, you know, there's a lot of other stuff that's not talked about. Black on black crime, number one, that doesn't seem to be an issue. And frankly, we don't hear about the high number of abortion clinics in the black community. And yet, you know, I'm not discounting what the police did in this case, but there are other issues that are just as big that get swept aside because it's not convenient for the media or for an agenda.
Well, you know, people who are voiceless when it comes to state apparatus, okay, need advocacy for their behalf. So, for example, if you are a cop and you get killed by someone, you already have something advocating for you. And the person who killed you, once identified, will be going to jail, will be arrested and be going to jail. So that's not even the issue. There's no need to protest.
I wish there was that advocacy for some people. You know what? Because the media and others have not made much of a deal of a certain police officer in St. Louis, the retired police captain who was killed during all this.
The guy who killed him was arrested.
Yeah, finally.
Okay. Finally. And let me say this. Anytime we identify what we call progress in America is because people had to advocate for it and push back against the status quo mentality, i.e. conservative, for something to change. And so what you're seeing now is people are pushing back against a status quo mentality about the police extrajudicial killings.
Absolutely, and everybody's doing that. That's not one group. There's nobody that's advocating for status quo here. Nobody wants this to stay the same as it is. Now, I mean, the defunders, I'm a little crazy, you know, are a little crazy, but nobody is saying that this can stand. Nobody is. Nobody wants it to stand because we see it. We've seen it. I mean, anybody that's seen it knows what happened. It was terrible. Nobody's arguing that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's
mm-hmm.
crazy. So, hey, Brother Warren, I hate to cut you short, but I have a couple of things.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks. And you got a show on. What nights are you on? And
I broadcast it at 1 p.m. Central this afternoon. In fact, the title of the show was called Conservative Lies and Talking Points.
Okay. And what's the name of your show?
New Orleans, Wake Up.
And it's here on Blog Talk Radio.
On Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, good enough. Well, thanks for calling, Brother Warren, and have a good one, and good luck with the
okay
with
then. Thank you.
Shows. Thank you.
Okay.
That's Brother Warren from New Orleans Wake Up. Now, again, some don't agree with him, and I don't agree with him on some of what he said, but I you know what? I want to give a voice to anybody that wants to call into the show, and I thank him for doing that. Look, this is the one I didn't want to get to, folks. This is the Iowa Hawkeye stuff. I didn't want to have to talk about some of this, but I've been talking about this by email with some folks, and been talking with some close friends, current friends, friends of the past, Eric, I don't think he's discriminating against you. Eric thinks Brother Warren not calling his show last night is discrimination. Brother Warren, if you're still listening, please call Eric on Tuesday. He's feeling lonely, so. anyway, back to the Iowa thing. I've not wanted to talk about this, but it's become an issue. And again, some of the stuff is well documented. Some of it's well done. I mean, Kirk Ferentz has handled this elegantly and professionally thus far. His initial response was to the death of George Floyd and the unrest that followed. And he acknowledged that America needs change and that he would like it to begin with the Iowa football program. And he allowed that if players were unanimous to kneel during the national anthem. Now, evidently, that wasn't good enough for some. For whatever reason, a former player called out, quote, racial disparity in the program, followed by he and others calling out individual coaches. Before long, one of those coaches was put on administrative leave, strength and conditioning coach Chris Doyle. But others mentioned Seth Wallace, the linebacker's coach, and the coach's son, Brian Ferentz, who's the offensive coordinator. Both of them are still actively on staff right now. Others continued to lodge complaints and issues. Now, one website, which I frequent, Hawkeye Nation, and its publisher, Rob Howe, dredged up a former issue with a former player. I won't dignify that player by naming him. Any Hawkeye knows who I am talking about. Anyway, that said player was busted for running a drug house in 2010 between the last game and the bowl game. Now, the charges were reduced to, like, I think, weed possession, but he was dismissed from the team before his last bowl game. He has, on and off over the years, accused Kirk Ferentz of blackballing him from the NFL, of not letting him work out at University of Iowa facilities before the draft, and not allowing him to wear his Iowa helmet at a senior All-Star game. Now, he subsequently backtracked on all that, and he even said he was a bit of a prima donna and sometimes he was a cancerous teammate. Now, he later then came back and said he was made by Coach Ferentz to wear a trash can at practice in front of fans. Now, it was refuted by numerous team members, and it was said that he donned the trash can and to continue to wear it as a joke. Now, in his latest egomaniacal ravings, he claimed all of the above again, and then he said he was told, almost while he was on the plane to Iowa City, that he wasn't welcome at the 10-year reunion of the 2009 Orange Bowl team, and that Coach Ferentz alerted cops and tipped them off to raid his house for that drug house arrest. Now, to wit, former player who will remain nameless, when you are arrested for running a drug house, you can pretty much assume you'll at least be missing a game, even if it's a bowl game. And dismissal usually is just a part of that. Since it was wearing a team helmet at future events, you know, using workout facilities, that's pretty much included there. Team reunions are sanctioned by the university. They're probably off the table as well. You were dismissed from the university by the student code of conduct. Now, that's not even the best part. This guy claimed that he graced Iowa with his presence. He said he had an offer, a firm offer from Ohio State. Now, this guy's from Ohio. I got news for you folks. Iowa guys know this, but Big Ten fans pretty much knows. If OSU was a legitimate offer, he wasn't about to come to Iowa. He wasn't going to Michigan or any other Big Ten school. If he had a legit OSU offer and he was from Iowa or from Ohio and he didn't have an alum, he wasn't a legacy at another school, he wasn't going anywhere but Ohio State. Guess what? He didn't have an offer from Ohio State. So in all this, Rob Howe, he was forced by the owners of Hawkeye Nation to remove the lengthy egomaniacal article with reason. The owners deemed the credibility as less than solid. Gee, I wonder why. I mean, literally, when you read this guy's stuff, you literally don't know where the stories end and the lies begin. It's that bad. But I'll tell you what, the damage is done. While the players have been tweeting about their unity, one little piece has almost been ignored. I'm talking about the transfer portal entry of Dylan Doyle. His tweet explained that his lifelong dream was to be a Hawkeye. And with his father being at the school for 21 years, that's not real difficult to grasp. His tweet didn't explain, nor did it need to, the situation or his reason or reasons for the move. The move does seem to imply that his father will not be staying at Iowa. But worse than this, there are actually people that call themselves Hawkeye fans, who reason this away with stuff like, oh, there's better talent at the position. And another one said, his dad makes $800,000 a year. He can afford to go elsewhere. And even some, well, it would be tough for him to stay. By the way, all that unity, as of this morning, exactly 4 current players wished him well on his tweet. None of those players are black. Now, I'm not saying that's, you know, but what's worse, that's not even close to the worst of it. If it can get worse, here it is. If you look at other retweets, like when a media outlet retweets something, the retweets on some of these other feeds are awful. I've seen stuff like, what a quitter. Boy, I guess when the going gets tough. Another one says, I guess he admits his dad's a racist asshole. Now, again, coaches Seth Wallace and Brian Ferentz are still on staff. They're not being looked into. At least apparently we're not seeing that. That hasn't been reported. Look, I've never questioned my loyalty as a fan of the Iowa Hawkeyes. I have never questioned my respect and admiration for Kirk Ferentz. However, I got to say this. After the way I have seen Dylan Doyle's dream and his career at Iowa destroyed, I seriously question it. Brian Ferentz, he's still working. Seth Wallace, he's still working. Kirk Ferentz, admittedly, by the players, he's not the problem. The scumbag former player, he's now coaching at a different school. Hawkeye Nation publisher Rob Howe, he's still with Hawkeye Nation. Other Hawkeye journalists, they're paying lip service by saying stuff like, boy, that must have been tough. Hey, guess what? Some of you helped put him in that position. So, yeah, I'm disgusted with some of them. I really am. I'm pissed off at some of them. Folks, I'm signing out. It's been a good rant, I guess. Want you all to have a good week. But I'm tired. This has been a tough one. So have a good week. Things are going to get better for the Hawkeyes, hopefully. And things are going to get better for our country. So God bless you all. God bless America. I'm out. Good night, folks. Have a good one.